Strengthen your immune system with Goldman Laboratories liposomal vitamin C and get 10% off. Quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Would you know how to get rid of your fear, phobia, stress, or anxiety? How to burst your fear and transform your life? Welcome to Fear Busters Show, presented by Lauren Rosenberg, fear and phobia relief expert and author of How to Move Forward When the Unthinkable Happens. You are listening to UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio with Lauren Rosenberg. www.fear-busters.com.
Hi, welcome back to UK Health Radio. This is Lauren Rosenberg speaking to Benji, who is going to share his worries, fear, and also his very special unthinkable story. So Benji, thank you for joining us today, and thank you for sharing. I know it's not going to be easy, but I'm hoping that it's going to help everyone that is going to listen to this today. You mentioned the fear of, you said the fear of, how do you explain it? Because I wasn't sure what your fear of, what you expect, or fear of life, or fear of...
I think it's the fear of being able to continue life normally after you've suffered the tragic loss of a child.
Mm-hmm. So do you mind explaining, whatever you feel comfortable to our listeners, what happened? And I know that this specific time is difficult because it's happened a year ago.
Yes, I'll tell the story. So almost exactly 1 year ago, my 15-year-old, very strong, very tall, handsome, healthy teenage son, all of a sudden got sick out of nowhere, all of a sudden complaining of terrible pain from his feet to his head. And we just thought the beginning of school year, maybe he picked up a virus or something in school. This was before COVID, so before that word was even part of our vocabulary.
Yeah.
So we just thought, he just picked up a virus, a bug, give him a couple of days in bed. Mm-hmm. And I came in from school on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, let him sleep at home. And then Monday back to school and everything will just be a regular.
Yeah, like a normal parents would do. We don't want to be hypochondriac, and we just, the body needs to have to fight and get used to it. So yeah, so you just a normal, absolutely, normal thing.
So we thought that. And then after a couple of days, he was in so much pain. He could barely move. He couldn't even climb up the ladder to his bunk bed. He had to put the mattress on the floor. And we were advised to take him into hospital. In hospital, they did a whole load of tests. And they thought maybe it was a virus, bacteria. They really didn't know what was wrong with him. They saw they had a high fever and a lot of pain. And after a couple of days, they said, the hospital said, look, we can't look after him in this hospital. You need to go to the big children's hospital in the center of Manchester. And they'll be able to investigate further and hopefully figure out what's wrong. And that began an almost about 8 weeks stay in hospital where we got various diagnoses and something incredibly rare, juvenile arthritis, which then developed into a more complicated thing called macrophage activation syndrome. Even doctors don't know what it is. It's a specialist aspect of this particular arthritis. And he was in hospital for many, many weeks. The hospital were incredible. They fought day and night to get him a trial medication, which at the time it's not on the market. They had to go to the manufacturers, and every dose he had was £250,000.
Wow.
just for one dose. They took his blood. They had a courier in the hospital that took it to the airport, took it to Europe to get tested every time he had them. They worked day and night to get it. And it wasn't really doing anything. And on the 7th of November, almost just a month or so before his 16th birthday, all of a sudden, I had actually gone back to work that afternoon. I'm a school teacher and taken a lot of time out of the classroom. We were by his bedside from early morning till 10:30 at night for almost 8 weeks. And I went to school. I was telling people things were looking a bit brighter and doctors were optimistic. And then 11 hours after that conversation with my colleagues, we rushed into the intensive. We were back in hospital. My son was rushed into intensive care and he passed away. You know, the strange thing is how he died at the end was very similar to patients who have died from corona. His lungs filled up and failed. But it went from optimism to utter despair in the space of a few hours. And I guess that's the story. The hospital, I must say, were absolutely brilliant. Every ward was fantastic. Amazing. And the professionalism and the love and the care.
Amazing. How did you, at the time we didn't know that the pandemic was going to happen. And that's probably, I mean, I don't know how about you, but I know that from my family, having lost also my daughter a few years ago, when the pandemic came up, it's almost like it felt another shock it felt something else. Like we felt that nothing else could happen. We experienced loss, and then this big thing came up, and it was a shock. And obviously, my daughters are different ages, and my family. So, how did your children react? Because it's not long ago that your son unfortunately passed away, and then now we have to deal with this pandemic.
So it was hard because he passed away in November. Nobody went back to school. My little ones went a bit to school, but my older kids didn't go back to school till January. So we were beginning to get into a routine. We were beginning to make sense of learning to live again and sort of getting up in the morning and saying, we have to get out of bed. We've got to get back to our routines because you can't stay indoors forever.
Yeah.
And all the energy and the effort that it took to get back into regular life, all of a sudden that stopped. We were stopped in that therapy track that sort of made us reconnect with society. And for me as a teacher, being around other teenagers was particularly challenging, seeing other teenage boys of that age.
Yeah, similar age. You're teaching that similar age.
I teach high school, so I teach 11 to 18 year olds. So the group of year 11 boys was my son's age. And it was particularly challenging to be around them, but I was doing it. And I, you know, those feelings of anger or despair and frustration that I had initially were beginning to go away. And I was managing and I was teaching. I wasn't exactly the same person as I was before, but the students recognized that I would be a bit different and maybe a bit quieter initially. And then the lockdown happened and we were back in our house again and we were back not seeing people. And I think for the family, they were concerned, what if we get coronavirus? Would there be another loss or another tragedy? And that was a definite concern. And yeah. I wouldn't say it crippled the family, but there were some members of the family were very worried about that.
When you experience loss and you've seen death, and especially something that is not, we don't wish it on anyone, and you don't expect in a normal range of life, that's not the way to bury your own child. It's not what we even think that can happen. But when you experience death, then having heard the pandemic, and then you do think, you know that life is so important, and you do know that it feels like you want to go on protective mode and you want to try to protect everyone. And this is where really, apart from following the guidelines and doing everything we can, is very much trusting, still trusting life. And you mentioned that the anger, the resentment, the grief, all those stages are totally normal, and it's perfectly normal to want to scream and to want to be angry, and but it doesn't, in the long run, it doesn't really help to move forward.
I think we've mastered there's two forms of screaming. There's the audible one where you hear the crying and the sobbing and mm-hmm. the sound comes out. Then there's the silent scream, which is just as, to look at, it's just as emotional. but there's no actual sound that comes out. And that's quite useful when perhaps you consider it inappropriate to be making certain sounds, or people around you won't want to hear you at that moment. So it's just the silence, that pain that emerges. But I think all of us were very good, or found it very therapeutic to express those emotions. I think, us as parents, we know that there was no sense that we were hiding our emotions from the rest of the family or the kids.
Yeah.
And we definitely gave them that permission. They didn't need permission, but they gave them that ability to show their emotions because we were showing.
And it's good, because otherwise they may just put the emotion on the side to want to be strong for one of you. And it is very much what I do is clearing emotion trap in the body, because then you can create other symptoms. I know that you joined one of my course, which is dealing with loss and grief and turning things into finding ways to carry on. How did you find the course? And I know that you did, and you also read my book that actually, strangely enough, came out 2 days before the lockdown, which is very strange timing after meant to be coming out a year ago. Would you mind sharing with the listeners if they are scared of losing a loved one or dealing with loss? I mean, I know we actually, in a way, I feel that I still feel privileged, and I don't know about you, how you feel, but I still feel privileged that I was with my daughter. We were allowed to be at the bedside table all the time, knowing what was going on. We were allowed to be at the funeral. We were allowed to grieve. Where now I feel very sorry for, I feel for everyone who is not even allowed to be with their loved one in hospital and not even allowed to go to the funeral. It's so limited. And that, in a way, I never even thought that was a privilege. And looking back now, I see it even more as a privilege. I mean, we had 1,000 people coming, joining us at the funeral, supporting us. And this is something that, now is not even possible. Seeing funeral online, I don't know how those people are even going to grieve get to term to move forward, because this was something that I never personally thought that ever would be a privilege. And I'm really grateful that, in a way, although I would never wanted to lose my daughter, that the timing was actually at that time, so that at least we could have the normal way of sort of everything was happening, but as a norm, like grieving and being there and having support.
So, I think that's true. That I've suffered now. My father passed away 4 years ago, and then my son. Mm-hmm. And I wanted so much. My father also spent a number of weeks in intensive care before he passed away. And all I wanted was to be there at the very, very end. Mm-hmm. And I was there in between on and off, but I wanted to be there right at the end. And thank God we were. I mean, my mother and I stepped out of his intensive care room for a couple of minutes. And then we got a call back, come back now. And we were there at the end. And I feel that was a privilege. And the same with my son. We were next to him the whole time in ICU. Yeah. And we went to ICU. We didn't know it was going to be the end. And looking back now, at a certain point, I can imagine it. I can see it when I close my eyes. We're right back in the room. But we're there, and I see the nurse's face changed. At one point, she was optimistic and smiling. Then at a certain point, she became very focused, because I think she knew before they told us that things weren't going to be right.
Yeah, but I'm so pleased, in a way, that you also experienced that you were there. Because this is something that I know how to deal with fear and I have all the tools, I just feel so much for those people who were not even able to be there. We stayed 12 days in hospital in intensive care, and I was there all the time, and right to the end we were there, and it is a privilege in that sense. And it doesn't mean it helps the grieving, but part of us is still like the transition. I feel very much to, I was there when my daughter transitioned from the physical to back into soul and spirit, and just to be there. And also I think you may not feel, I don't know if it's also for us to not feel guilty to just be there supporting, to be there really, although we don't want to be there and we want another outcome, but it's not in our hands. So
I think ironically, it's, if I think back, the last conversation my father had with me before he was too ill then to speak was, said to me, "Benji, I love you, I love you." And the last thing I said to my son before they put him in a coma was, "Naftali, I love you, I love you." Mm-hmm. And on some level that makes me, it sort of connects a circle, and it's that there's a certain beauty in that pattern, that the last thing he heard was a message of love. Mm. And I'm proud that we were there. But if you go back to the course I did with you, I think you can see that the evidence in front of you. One of the things
yes.
we did was being able to tell the story.
Yeah, so so for our listeners...
I'm doing well.
Yeah, so for our listeners, when I met Benji from different... Somebody we got in touch. We had to connect in some ways. Benji joined my course for dealing with grief and moving forward. And when I met Benji, you were not even able to, which understandable, able to talk about to tell a story. And part of the course is to desensitize emotionally, to be able to talk about what happened without reliving it so much, without being in the movie. So basically what we did was desensitizing and be able to tell the story as a story, like if you were reading a book, so you were distanced. So now when Benji is talking to us, he's able to talk about his own personal story without being so emotional, and to the point where everybody can hear him, you can really talk and not having all those emotions coming up, not because we repressed them, but because we actually worked on them and we actually dealt with them, so they're no longer there. So and that also, when they're no longer there, it allows us to see what was the beauty in the story, even though it's not the story that we wish on anyone, but there is still some miracles that happen in that story, and we can just see those little miracles. Even just the fact that you were there at the right time, that is a miracle in itself. So so the course was to help dealing with the grief, releasing any emotion, and be able to talk about it without being so emotional that you couldn't even move forward. I'm glad that we have, yes, as you can, as you're telling our listeners, we know that we can hear it even. But what would you, I mean, how, COVID is probably something, I mean, looking back, I mean, yes, I've heard people mentioning it sometimes in some years, even when I was younger, people would say like it could happen, pandemic, but very, just a tiny little bit, nothing. And now we are in it, and it is happening, and it is really hard on people, and so many people have lost life, and we know also. Someone that we know very close to us that also passed away, and it's it's something we can't avoid. We can't avoid loss. We don't think it's ever going to happen to us, but then it suddenly strikes us. What do you find is helpful to move forward and help maybe your children?
Okay, so I think also if you think back, that any name, think back to that course we did, there was someone else came on with a very different type of loss. And yes. I remember very vividly that first session, the embarrassment and awkwardness of feeling broken over the loss of a grandparent, mm-hmm. compared to both you and I talking about the loss of a child, and how you had to explain or gently coax the other participants, saying, no, it's okay. No, it's legitimate. I think part of the COVID is everyone has to accept that whatever the loss is, it's painful for the family, and not to try and compare or to equate or to make a hierarchy of what is more profound. Whilst I believe very, very sincerely that we have the capacity to more naturally get over the loss of a parent, because that should be happening in the normal scheme of things. And if you're married or you have a partner, you know, 50% are going to go before the one or the other. So you're going to, and if you're married, then that should be happening to one of you. And there's a capacity to you don't speak about it, but you recognize it when it's, I think, a first world country where children don't die. If it's a third world country and there's starvation and children are dying from malnutrition, that's a different place. And whilst, you know, that people might recognize that those types of things happen, but in Western democracies, thank God, children are not dying in huge numbers. And so as a society, we don't think about it. We don't, you would never imagine in people's worst case scenarios of where your life could go completely wrong. I think, you know, you'd think, lose my home, lose my job, maybe my marriage would fall apart. No, you never think of that other. It's just, I never ever imagined in my craziest dark places that I would be where we are now as a family. We would have lost someone so vital and so much part of our life. So I think what COVID's shown is death happens, and everyone needs to just make space for other people's grief and allow them to grieve without that sense of my grief is not appropriate, because we should just validate.
Yeah, I agree. Very much. It doesn't matter what grief, what loss, if it's the loss of a pet or loss of a job or loss of a house or loss of a person. It's any loss has a big impact on somebody's life. And it's not because you see the person maybe smiling or be able to function as they expect that they fine. It does. It deep down, things have changed, and unless they find the right way to deal with it, it's going to take toll, and it is going to stop them being really who they are. And yes, I remember that very much when I ran the course of loss and grief and moving forward. The course is not just for losing a person, it's also for losing your career, your job, or anything. But the person did feel very embarrassed in a sense, because we were talking about losing a child, but that person had a big role in their person's life. So it doesn't matter. It's something that if you never experience this loss, even if it's a pet, it has an impact. It's a transition that we're not used to, because we live in such a physical world that we find it quite hard to, unless we actually have the person in front, to imagine that the person is still here but in a different form. I mean, for me, I very much feel that my daughter is still very much with us, but not in the physical world. In fact, I want to share something yesterday that happened. My daughter had very, very long hair and wanted to donate her hair for charity for children who suffer from cancer. And unfortunately, she was not able to. She passed away before she could do that. So her other sister decided to take it on and decided to do it. And just yesterday, she was meant to have her hair cut before COVID, but that changed. So yesterday we decided, I said, she can't wait, her hair is so long and we need to give it. So we raised some money and we had her hair cut, and she did it. And the bizarre thing is, as we came out of the hairdresser, the ambulance that we created was in the memory of our daughter, late daughter, just was parked just there. And that was so, it was like, I mean, the timing, the fact it was there is usually, I mean, we never even see it. We very rarely see it. That was, so it shows that they're still always there. I don't know if you feel the same, if you feel that there is this, this, like, no longer physical, but still very much there in a message and.
I think for us at the moment, it's still very fresh. So the absence and the gap at the table and the lack of
him
in
the home is
dominant. That's dominant at the moment.
Yeah, of course, that's going to be.
I can't think of examples now, but I think I feel confident in saying that there have been moments where we felt that he's been there, or something of his essence or presence or example is sort of guiding us or.
Yeah, so very much in order to feel that, it's also part of the grieving. It's gradually, as it's always going to be there. It's you know, a child is always going to be there in certain ways. But as we, not the time, because time doesn't, I don't find time healing. I just find it's how much I work on myself that helps. Not, I don't like when people say, oh, what it's like 4 years, it doesn't make any difference, it could feel like yesterday, it doesn't make it, the time doesn't. But as you give yourself permission to go beyond the actual physical part that we're actually missing the person so much, we can actually connect more and see some signs. But that is obviously different, it's like depending on where we are. And I personally don't like when people say, it's happened quite a few years ago and you should be fine by now. And it just, that doesn't work for me. It's not, it's days you're going to be fine, and some days you're going to crash down, and that's perfectly normal. And it's, the very important thing is how you get yourself back up. That is the important thing. You could have just decided not to teach anymore, and you're still teaching and you're doing an amazing job. You're inspiring so many teenagers. So what would you have you ever spoken to teenagers? Are you did anybody ask you any questions, or have you talked to you?
I think when I first came back, everyone was quite, they were happy to see me back in the building, because I've been in the school for 15 years, so I haven't been away for so long before. And they're like, no, I'm quite a visual person and do a lot around the school. There have been occasions where I've mentioned things, but I don't want to go into that area of life, because you never know the kids' personal lives. And sometimes, especially when you're teaching philosophy or religious education, we have the potential to really trigger people's emotional states, sometimes intentionally and others unintentionally. And so I never know, or if, as you said before, someone could have lost a pet, and I talk about my loss, and then they think about their hamster, and then they get all emotional, or someone. So we're quite aware of not wanting to open up too much emotional response, and sometimes, because the kids are quite fragile anyway.
Yeah.
But we're coming up to the anniversary in November, and if I'm able, I would like to be strong enough, but as the time gets nearer, I think it's going to be more challenging. But if I'm able to do it, then I would like to talk about him as a role model, because the letters we got from his friends and the stories we got told, how he helped and looked after people, things he never told us about, especially from a child who found school difficult because he was dyslexic, and you know, he always felt not very good about himself, but he did all these wonderful things for his friends that they told us about. I would like to capture that essence and share that, but I've got to be
I'm happy to help you for this, because I think it would be really important for you and to share the message and to help other teenagers to see what in such a short time of life what someone can really achieve, because your son achieved so much in that short time of life. So I'm more than happy to help you to be able to do this. Regarding the pandemic and COVID, did you have to go through, to talk to the student that you're teaching? I don't know if you're about stress and loss and.
So what I have been doing, I make a school, a video assembly for my students. My channel, Rabbi Rickman TV. On YouTube.
Good. People can listen to it. Please go and have a look.
they're designed for children, for teenagers, but the messages are fundamental. You know, I spoke about resilience and spoke about being proactive or reactive and not feeling like a victim. A lot of mindfulness and mindset and positive attitudes, and to speak to them in a way that many teachers never speak to children, to tell them that I understand the struggles. So I remember at the beginning of the lockdown, I did a video filmed in the garden. Now, at the beginning of the lockdown, all of a sudden, I'm sure you heard it in London, in Manchester, it was very noisy. Nature seemed to come alive. The birds,
yes.
It was so quiet in society that the birds suddenly sounded very loud. So there were a few times where I had to record the video a few times because I got interrupted by the birds tweeting in the trees. But I spoke to them about, you know, how school for many students is where they feel, for some students, where they feel good about themselves, is where they feel they've got their friends and lots of positives that school is. And I spoke about how school for other students is where they feel really bad about themselves, yeah. That learning is difficult and they're having it. And I presented both sides of what's, and then the challenge will be for you is being at home. For the students whose self-esteem is built up because they're really smart, at every lesson they get a chance to show how clever they are, then being at home takes that away from them because they have no audience to celebrate their brilliance. But for the students who school is really bad, then being at home was going to be an oasis, it'll be heaven.
Yeah.
Because for them, they're not going to be in a situation where they feel lousy. So I really tried to find messages of, you know, that are very practical pieces of advice, but that also talk to the experience of what it is to be a student, to be in high school, and to say things that people don't like to say. Teachers don't want to say school is difficult often. They like to imagine it's all brilliant, but it's not. It's a very complicated part of a child's development.
It does. And as a fear expert, I can tell you that school has a big impact on fear, emotions, and unfortunately, we don't teach in school how to be resilient and how to deal with emotions. And
so my videos do.
Excellent.
The latest one is only a short one because I have different lengths of assembly and different needs in school. But I gave them guidance about being proactive and reactive and not allowing other things or other people to determine how they feel about themselves.
Yeah.
And some of the videos mothers told me they watched with their children and then they had conversations. So this was a perfect example of how you can learn remotely, distance, and build. And the kids wrote to me, some of the kids who left the school, so we're watching your videos because they're giving us so much that we don't get anywhere else. So I found that being there, you know, coping with the loss and the grief, when I push myself to be there for other people and I focus on, you know, living but making a difference to people's lives, then that actually gives an energy rather than reflecting on what life has taken from me. I try and push myself to give and invest in other people's lives.
Would you say that you're doing even more, or you were doing it before, or now it's something that is so that is more important because you've experienced, unfortunately, the loss of yourself?
So I think it's probably who I am as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm definitely, yeah, if you ask my wife, I don't stop, which is also, I know it's not good.
You need to realize that you're also important and you need to have your own time.
That's on the schedule. We'll get to that point number 99. But I'm doing it for other people consciously because many parents don't have the tools or the relationship with their children to have those conversations. One of the things that I feel blessed with the relationship I had with my son is that we were so close. I used to call him my bodyguard, not only because he was taller than me, but from the age of 7, he was with me all the time. So on the one hand, it creates the loss is even greater because we were always together. But I have that pride that I had a special, super relationship with him, and I will treasure that. So I know that parents don't always have that experience.
I really understand that because I also had gone so well and such a close bond and it's true, not it doesn't always work and some parents don't experience it. We didn't mention to our listeners that your son is a twin.
Yes.
Yeah.
A twin sister.
Yeah, so how is she doing?
So that was always a relationship that I think even as parents, we never fully understood. You know, when they were very young, there was a time that I think he was a baby or he was one or something. He was crying and we tried absolutely everything to calm him down. We offered him food, a drink, nothing worked. And his twin sister just got up, brought him his cup. That we'd offered him the same cup. He took it from her and he calmed down straight away.
Wow.
And from the earliest age, we saw that. She is very empty inside. She
I'm sure it's not an easy process.
Amazing, amazing young girl who just started her A levels, who did an EPQ during the break from school, pretty much on her own, with very little help from anyone else outside. She pushes herself. She's determined, but there's an emptiness inside of her that is quite harsh and quite severe. We give her a lot of hugs.
Yeah, I'm sure it's being a twin. I mean, I'm sure it's perfectly normal that this emptiness is just there. And
more so than everybody. Or, I don't know if it's more so or in a different. You're into color, a different color than everybody else. Because there's an older daughter, just 1 year older than the twins were. So they grew up as like a triplet because they were all so close in age.
Mm-hmm.
So they grew up very, very close together. But there's something about a twin that is a different concept.
I think it's, well, energy-wise, is a different concept. They're so close, they're always together. And I don't think you ever, especially at that age, you never think as a twin, you always think that you're always going to be together. So it's like having, it's, in a way, it's losing double. In that sense, instead of just one person, you're losing yourself too. In so it's double hard. It's really, I really feel for her.
It's hard for her to celebrate life moments when she finished GCSEs. She always, you know, that should have been with her twin brother.
Yeah, everything is.
It's the same age. They should get to things at similar distance. Yeah. So that's
It's already hard when you get older, like in for her twin, she'll be the same age. But like, for example, your other children, if they're older than your son, you have a younger one? When the younger ones will reach that age, 15, and then they'll get 16, 17, 18, they'll be older than their brother. And that's every stage is a challenge and is different, and we have to acknowledge every stage and we just, you know, the first birthday, and it's not because it's the first birthday, the second birthday is also different, the third birthday, everything is different, and
we changed her birthday that. No, we changed her birthday. She's the twins were born on the 3rd of December, so we just told her, pick any day in the calendar that you want and we'll celebrate it as your day. We're not going to call it a birthday. It's just your day.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt that was, you know, we just let the day. Her friends were very good. Her friends knew it was her birthday. And some of them just very quietly just brought something and just, we're here for you. But as parents, we just let her have the space because.
Yeah, if that's what works and that's what she feels comfortable. And there's no right or wrong. It's really how you feel and how you manage to move forward. Because the main thing is to still, like you're doing, you're passing on a message, you're helping teenagers, you're helping parents, and that's really important. And I also feel that what I'm trying to do is also like showing that life is important and that you can make a difference and that every day is a miracle and every day is worth living fully. So do you have a quote in your mind? Do you follow someone that inspires you and helps you, or any?
Okay, so one of my educational approaches is I want the students to enjoy the process of learning. Learning needs to be fun. Learning needs to give them that they're developing and they're achieving. I had I've got so many new classes at the start of the year. So one group of girls said to me, I'm really bad in this subject. I said, hold on a minute. You've never had me teach you before. You have no idea what I'm looking for as being good. What the teacher last year thought was good is guaranteed not what I think is good. And I explained what I think is good is if you respect other people when they're speaking, you respect yourself, that you engage with the lesson, you listen, you enjoy the. I don't care about a test result. It's not about how many words you can learn or the vocabulary and all that. All those are important, but I want my students to really enjoy the process of education, because then I believe they'll want to learn in the future. There's so much to learn. There's so many brilliant ideas that can transform our lives.
There is definitely. And I was thinking a little bit like the pandemic, the COVID actually is teaching us this, because they had to stay at home. So now they realize that they are also privileged to be able to go to school. But they also realize that they can learn from at home, and that a piece of paper may not be so important. Yes, we need it because we know structure and we need, but the whole idea of tests changed. It had to change because they couldn't do it. So we are learning from that. Benji, thank you so much for sharing to our listeners your story. I'm so sorry to hear that you had to go through this, and I wish you a long life, and I will be thinking about you on the anniversary, and we send you lots of strength, and you're doing an amazing job. You're helping teenagers, and I think this is like priceless, because you're really helping them. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for being with us today. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. You are listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Lauren Rosenberg, fear and phobia relief expert. I am here to help you to unlock your fear and transform your life. If you feel you need more help, you're welcome to email me, lauren@fear-busters.com, or go on my website, www.fear-busters.com. You can book a 20 minutes online free consultation where we can look how I can help you. You can also join my online classes every week so that you can start feeling better and unlocking your fear so you can transform your life. Looking forward to next week. Have a wonderful week. Bye.